This is the Sounding Board Podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Thanks to Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to drink wise.
Nice to have your company on the Sounding Board for Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to drink wise. This is Series 6, Episode 26, and I have no idea where to start today, be it Anastasia Palaszczuk, John Coates, Alistair Clarkson, Sam Mitchell, Caroline Wilson, Chicky Boak, Travis Spoke, the Ashes, the NFL ruling on COVID-19. Craig Hutchison, hello.
You've been everywhere, man, by the sounds of it. Hello, Damo. Can I just start with something different altogether? Damo's cynicometer. This is a little reader I have over here, a little gauge of your cynicism week to week. It's called Damo's cynicometer. Where in the cynicometer?
You've misrepresented my cynicism, by the way, Hutchie, but for furthering your cause on this, let's go.
There'll be a better name that, by the way. If you've got one out there, just email it to me and I'll inject it next week. But the cynicometer for now, how many days do the Olympics have to go on for before you'll accept that they're going to go ahead?
I accept like they're going ahead,
10, 12. Is it the closing ceremony? Is it the thank you and good night? It's been a great, we'll see you in 24 in Paris? Or is it you starting to get to a point of acceptance?
I know. I told you, Hutchie, once they started, I was all in on them, as I was this afternoon watching Ariana Titmus win the gold medal. No, that was always going to happen.
Such a
smear. I'm allowed to be cynical, Hutchie.
You've swung.
We are enduring a worldwide pandemic relating to COVID-19, Hutchie. Right now, you and I cannot leave this studio for more than 2.5 kilometres either way. There's 13 million Australians locked down, and we're bringing people from around the world into the one already COVID-ravaged city to have a celebration of sport.
People are enjoying it. It's gone off well. Touch wood, so far so good. I think it's been great, and it's great to have the Olympics here, and it's great for you to admit you're wrong off the top of the show today.
I'd love you to admit that your need for it to continue is more commercial, as everything is in your life, than a love of people coming together to compete in sport.
If you think
your eyeballs in sponsorship requirements, I would have thought, with the...
What, with three cities of shops closed? Yeah, that's a good theory. Well done. Yeah, well done. Good theory. There's 13 million people with their businesses shut, Damo.
Yeah.
It's a terribly trying time, and not something that is to be laughed about in a commercial sense.
Everything's commercial with you, Hutchie.
Damo, that's offensive.
Oh, please.
That is offensive.
Oh, please, Hutchie.
There are people...
You honestly are getting your heart warmed by the fact that we're living through a pandemic. You and I and 13 other million people in Australia can't move, and you think it's the right thing?
Damo, if you think that anyone's businesses are better in a pandemic, you are more naive than I thought you were. This is a really trying...
I didn't say better in a pandemic.
This is a really...
You've got some deals that you're selling, I'd imagine, Hutchie, on the coverage of the Olympics. I didn't think I was saying anything too outrageous there.
The Sydney, Melbourne, and today Adelaide, hopefully touch wood, communities are shut. So it's a pretty tough time in business for everyone who lives in those three towns, as we do.
Yep.
I do think the Olympics has been great for people in general to be able to have a little bit of escape from their woes. And if you're in... particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, if you're in a lockdown for a period of time, in Sydney particularly, then hopefully the television broadcast and to a lesser extent our radio broadcast is providing you some relief.
But they're not going on. I don't think they're being held, Hutchie, to make people feel better about themselves. I think they're being held because... they are being held because of all the commercial deals attached to them. The NBC deal in the States and the IOC itself. Oh, we'll get to John Coates in a minute. This is a commercial project, Hutchie.
The whole world's commercial, but we have a fundamental difference a view on this. I think it's a good thing the Olympics are on. We need to get back to normal in our lives as best we can. We can't let the virus stop us doing the things that matter. And the Olympics is just another symbol of that.
I get that, Hutchie. But there's no kids at school today in this state, right as we speak.
Yeah.
We've had 200 days of lockdown.
And if there's a small silver lining, tiny, tiny, it's that hopefully a new generation of kids, young girls, got to see Ariana Titmus swim today at 20
past
off.
How good was that?
It was magic.
I think it's right up there with anything we've got to compare it with when it comes to international sport.
And I know everyone sits back in the cheap seats and they have a ping at Channel 7, this and that, and them changing channels, and it's easy to be critical and Twitter's full of cynics. But in reality, they've done, I think, a tremendous job of providing you access to multiple channels, be it on your phone or on your TV.
I would agree with that.
To watch it.
And
I thought Basil did a terrific job of the call today.
Yeah. He had the luxury, didn't he, of that last 15 metres, knowing he could use what he'd prepared, which I think is great. But becoming a legend, having to beat a legend, she was just in front enough, wasn't he, to go with that line with confidence, albeit less than a second.
Yeah, you would have been second-guessing it with 50 to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't take long for us to buy in and become instant experts when we're winning.
Yeah.
So they're abnormal times, aren't they? They really are.
No, and you're referring there to the basketball being moved, wasn't it, I think, in the last quarter, the men's game?
I just see...
I didn't have an issue with it, because if you've got a phone, you've got access to the 7 Plus app, which is quite extraordinary, Hutchie. And I don't work for Channel 7, but that app is as good an app as I've seen.
I just feel like everyone's angry about everything all the time. Like, can we just take a breath and understand and have some empathy that we're in a pandemic and things are happening and you're doing your best you can as whether it be a broadcaster or a society, and don't sweat the small stuff. Don't worry about it. It's like everyone's angry about everything all the time.
Where do we go to that?
Well, it's just been on my mind a bit. Like, and I know Twitter attracts this audience, right? But it's everyone's angry.
What, you just woken up to this?
Oh, my goodness. It just gets worse and worse by the day.
But you've just woken up to this, have you?
Oh, so I want to address this one because I know it happened late last week and I got quite a bit of feedback on this, good, bad and indifferent. Chicky Boak and the Port Adelaide Footy Club on Friday night. This is what happened. I was listening to Wednesday morning and Travis talk about how his mum had flown to Adelaide. He was so excited to take her to the game. Their story's well told about what they've been through together over a long period of time. She's one of the great mums of footy.
Yep.
And she was driving back to Melbourne to beat the border closure and still couldn't go to the game in Melbourne.
Because no one could.
No one could. Now, the thought there was, wouldn't it be great to experience her view of Travis's game through her lens during the game? So I asked our guys, are we in the venue on Friday night or are we in the studio? And they said, we're in the venue.
Yep.
And I said, well, could we put a request into the AFL to add Chicky to our commentary team? Because we think that'd be great content. And we'd happily move to our corporate box, which is empty at Marvel, 30 seats, to create mass space to achieve that goal and see what they say. The request came back a tick. That's okay. Now, I didn't expect it would or wouldn't, but it did. And then, so we're able to share that news with a it's great for the content, and also, secondly, or even more importantly, you can create a moment that she'll never forget for her son. So it felt good.
Yep.
The AFL had a change of heart, or I don't think a change of heart, but it was approved at a lower level. It went to a more senior level, and there's a whole bunch of things going on at the senior level that the mid-level wouldn't know. That's understandable.
Yep.
There's a whole lot of knock-on effects.
There's an optics attached to this too, Hutchie, which I'll get to at some stage, but I'm keen to
maybe
get the background on it.
Yeah, so there's optics. There's also, you know, precedent and other families and one versus the other and all that, and I get it. So the decision was made that it couldn't happen. I totally accept that. It's a real shame and sad for Chicky.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's not. It's our job just to ask the question.
When I heard about it, that had been arranged, and at that stage when I heard about it, that it had been approved, I actually thought, what a fantastic outcome. That's what I thought. But then I didn't find out that it didn't happen until a day later.
We would have loved to have helped create that scenario. Equally, I understand, though, that there's things at play that sit in the powers of the AFL and the state that you don't know or are familiar with.
So who did it reach? Did it reach Gillen? Did it reach?
I think it reached the exec level. It was an executive decision, and it was explained to me why. And I
get why they've said no to it eventually too, Hutchie, by the way. Because it's on a knife's edge, isn't it, the whole game. And to allow a special provision for someone, and obviously this someone in this instance is the mother of a player, but to allow a person outside of the confines of who is and isn't allowed to go to a game at this very point in time, to me there's an optics on that where do you then draw the line? And as much as I would have liked Chicky Boak to have been there, I get why they've eventually said no.
So that's fair enough. So our job is just to ask the question
and
accept the outcome either way. I totally accept it. I didn't squabble with it. Okay.
Yep.
I understand there's but I saw some of the commentary people getting angry either way. And someone said you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. And someone else said that's wrong. Don't worry about it. Like it's just our job.
To try it.
To try it.
Yeah.
And I think it would add a great value to our broadcast as well. So
I would have, absolutely.
It was a good natured request. And I just wanted to clear that up. I had a few inquiries about it along the way.
Yeah, fair enough. I was going to ask you about it because I wasn't aware of the background.
In a word,
yes.
Initially, and then we'll come back to it. Do you think you should need to be vaccinated to go to the footy next year?
Yep.
Do you think you need to be vaccinated to play the game next year?
Yep.
You're unambiguous about that.
We talk about trying to move on, Hutchie, and I don't see a way that we're going to be able to move on unless we've got a starting point for something. And if the starting point happens to be the vaccinations, that's it. Because the messaging about please get vaccinated, please don't do this, it's just requests. There's no legislation around it. Now, let me ask you the same questions. Do you believe you should?
I think to go to the footy, you need to be vaccinated.
And yeah. to play footy?
I think to play, you probably need an exemption to not be vaccinated.
Sure.
I'm pretty naive in this area. But I would suspect there's some areas, be it cultural, religious, or otherwise, where they're unique to that person or medical.
Yep.
So there might be some scenarios that you need to apply to for exemption.
I just want to say here too, Hoshi, because you're talking about people blowing up. I'm not pro-vax. I'm not anti-vax, okay? So I'm pro having a choice. I am also strongly advocate that there are ramifications for choice too. If you choose to do so, there's a choice. There's a ramification. If you choose not to do so, there's a ramification. Can we contrast this conversation, given you've asked it from the context of the AFL, with what the NFL is doing?
Yep.
And that is that
They put the consequence on the clubs.
Yep. If there is a postponement or a cancellation of a game that cannot be replayed, the onus, and if the reason for that movement of the game is on an unvaccinated participant, that loss will be recorded against that team. The NFL can do that. It is more of a private organisation than the AFL is, Hutch. This is just my observation.
I thought it was a smart move. It was controversial.
Yep.
I thought it was a bold move because it shifted the onus of responsibility
to the individual. And ultimately the clubs.
Yeah, ultimately there'd be all sorts of litigation and knock-on effects in this.
Yeah, there will be.
But I thought the NFL made their position really clear.
Yeah.
You can choose to be vaccinated or not, but if it affects us, it's your problem.
Okay, so they're taking the view, you choose to play this sport that we run, that's what you sign up to.
Yeah, and I would think it's even more important in the crowd than it is on the field.
Yep.
For me, 40,000 in the stands in a highly concentrated area is even more challenging than 40 people
who are living
on the field.
A very strict life in preparing and readying themselves for the contest with regards to COVID.
But that might be a really naive view, but I think you're entitled, just like it's a bad analogy, but a bookmaker chooses whether they want a customer or not based upon the effect on their business. And people go, it's not fair or reasonable. And they say, well, we can choose who comes into our shop or doesn't.
Yeah.
Retailers can turn away your business if they don't want it. The AFL are entitled, I think, to turn people away if they feel like that person could have a health impact on others at the venue.
I don't think they're going to do it though, Hutchie. I'll tell you why. And you tell me if I'm misreading the situation. Because they are entwined with government. Now, there's layers of government and there's different allegiances in each state. But every game is effectively, particularly with COVID-19, is requiring government sign off. I don't see governments...
Don't you?
I don't see governments saying and stating as fact, you need to be vaccinated. It'll be an urging, there'll be a recommendation, there'll be a request, please do so. But I don't see governments instituting too many projects that require it.
I think they will at sport because the consequences fall on them. Society get angry.
So you can sports the difference then?
Well, society get angry when they blame governments.
Angry are they going to get when they're told that they can't attend unless they're vaccinated?
I think it'll be a small minority versus the lockdowns and the knock-on effect of business closures and all the other things that come with it. Might be really wrong.
Well, why aren't we doing it now?
Areas we're talking and we don't know anything about.
No, we do.
I'll certainly be taking every bit of advice and counsel known to man and woman on this over the summer to understand it better. But that would be my back of a napkin view. Don't you think?
I still can't see the governments of this country telling people that in order for them to attend or not attend something, they need to be... partaking in the vaccination.
Qantas have been very upfront.
Qantas have.
A very progressive business.
But that's a private business. I know that it's required government money to stay afloat, like a lot of other industry.
But the knock-on effect...
But that's a private business, Hutchie.
The knock-on effect affects many more.
Jane's just pointing out that childcare already does require it.
Yeah, I think it's a precedent. And I think it should be a starting point for players, but I would leave the wriggle room of religious, cultural, health... grounds to seek an exemption, which is not dissimilar, I guess, to what happens in some instances now on some areas of the...
I didn't realise until last year when the conversation took hold, Hutchie, with how people were living their lives in COVID situations, that there was a requirement for a footballer to get a flu shot. Did you catch up with that last year? And I've spoken to a footballer in the last couple of days who... This footballer's going way back.
No, that was well tabled at the time.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yep. That was well tabled at the time. And I look, it's pretty tricky out there, isn't it? Like, you look at the what was your initial reaction when you saw the rallies on Saturday in Sydney and Melbourne?
Disgust.
Anger?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So there'll be people hearing that saying, well, why are you angry and disgusted?
Well, there'll be people listening now who will be angry and disgusted that you had that view. There'll be people listening now who went and who would have said, you don't understand my rights to express myself in the way that I have.
Yeah.
You still feel the same way?
Did you have the same view?
I felt every bit that way.
Yeah.
And I don't apologise for it.
Yeah, I'm not apologising for it. It's my opinion.
I believe in choice in life. So I understand those that do and don't want to be vaccinated. I understand those that do and don't agree with lockdowns. Have your choice.
Yeah.
Have your say. I don't mind what if it is or isn't. I do believe in just accepting the rules of things, though, and not trying to squabble with it. Like, just cop the outcome.
Yep.
If you're not meant to do it, don't do it. Stay home and complain about it.
Some of that footage flying around was, probably getting way off topic. It was borderline what happened at the Capitol building, wasn't it? Some of it. Without the violent outcomes. But the attitudes were the same.
I saw some commentary on social suggesting that the horse picture had been manipulated. Did you see that?
Yeah, I didn't want to get too involved in that one, but yes, I'm aware of that.
That didn't travel well as a reaction to that tweet, did it?
I don't read feedback. I don't read comments. So you might have to.
I think 99.9% of the Australian population were outraged at what happened in the.
But even if okay, even take that part out of it. But to see substances that might have been paint for all I know being thrown at policemen and women. Full stop, Hutchie. Where are we going in this country?
No good. I've got to switch gear for a sec. I didn't ask you about this last week, but I think it's appropriate to. Glenn Archer stepped down from the North Melbourne board.
Yep.
Do you feel vindicated about your long-time
negative view
or campaign to remove him from that role?
I haven't had a campaign to remove him, if you want to talk about this particular topic.
Well, you've been vocal that you didn't believe he should be in that role.
I've been vocal in...
That's maybe not a campaign, it's an opinion.
That's a very, very much very different to a campaign, Hutchie. I mean, he can do what he wants. I've been critical of what's happened to North Melbourne in the Times, and there's now two times that I know of, maybe more, but certainly two times he's been a director of the club, yeah. Yeah, I felt it was a shambles.
You think he made the right decision?
Well...
Was it his decision?
I actually don't know. I don't know. I think you'll find he's been off for some time, but I don't know. And look, I'm referring to the debacle, and I think was the word I used at the time of the sacking, effectively, of Brad Scott 18 months into a 3-year deal that the board had signed him up to, and then basically offering three Hail Mary offers to former North Melbourne people to become coach, they being Alistair Clarkson, John Longmire, Adam Simpson, and then. Those all being said no to, and then they ended up appointing Reece Shaw, which, as we know,
didn't
last the season.
Yeah, I feel...
In terms of when they made that decision that he wouldn't be going into a second season.
I feel a bit for him. I'm glad he's off the board because I've said this to him many times before. I think he's a really talented businessman in his own right.
You have said that.
Yep. Does some great things in the community. He's an unbelievable heart in the community.
I vouch for that, yes.
I think he might have a tiny blind spot for his love of the Kangaroos, and it's so emotional to him that he might not make every right call. And he gives up his time, effort, and energy at no cost to do it. And it's hard. So I feel like we as a footy media are so punitive on people that make mistakes I'm not distancing myself from that at all, by the way. I'm the same. We're so hard on people that make mistakes, and it is tricky to do. So I have empathy for him.
Yeah, I get that, Hutchie.
And I'm glad he's found a bit of a happier...
But it's a choice too. You talk about choices before. It's a choice to want to become a director.
It's an unpaid gig.
Yeah,
and the favourites of those that were brilliant players don't always make brilliant directors or brilliant coaches, right? That's just the reality. He's the shin boner of the century.
Yeah,
he's a brilliant businessman in his own right. I just think sometimes you can get a little bit too emotionally invested. I wouldn't think.
Well, how would you view North Melbourne under his watch?
Well, they made some mistakes, but I don't. You know, they definitely made some mistakes. They're starting to get it together a little bit, aren't they? Would you say?
Yeah, I would.
Would you concede that, Damo?
Yeah, but I don't know whether that's got. I wouldn't know whether that's got anything to do with Glenn Archer, though.
Well, he was part of the David Noble choice in the end.
Well, they also then spent a fair bit of money to get Paul Ruse on board, who got David Noble over the line. And when you've got someone the clout of Glenn Archer on your board, ideally you're not having to pay Paul Ruse to go and get David Noble for you, right? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, but I just...
Because that's how it happened. They pay Paul Ruse. Paul Ruse goes and gets David Noble.
Club greats either get too much power, they're intimidating because of their reputation, they're not quite as skilled as others, or somewhere in between, but they rarely work on boards.
I'll tell you one who has worked, Jason Dunstall.
That is
exhibit A. He
might be the absolute exhibit of what worked. I would look back and say Chris Judd's reign at Carlton, one of the great people, smart guy, wasn't a brilliant reign on the board. Styx Kernahan, in fairness, wasn't a great reign on the board.
And that was for a long time.
Mark Rusciutto, great businessman, great person, good broadcaster, not brilliant on the board. Like, so I don't think it's their – I don't think he's a lone ranger, Glenn. Mm. And I don't think it's – and all those people gave all of their time and they're going to be earning way more money to do it. So I have some empathy for him. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, fair enough.
And Jason, you're right, has been a monumental figure.
We may as well talk about Hawthorn now, then, Hutchie, given we've just thrown Jason Dunstall into that conversation out of nowhere. What is going on with Caroline Wilson? And I ask you this because I don't know. The way that this story has played out, Caroline Wilson stating on your show, it was Monday, correct me if I'm wrong on the timeline, Monday of last week, and we're talking on this particular Monday. Monday of last week, Hutchie, on Footy Classified, said that Alistair Clarkson... said that Sam Mitchell had expressed a view that he didn't want Alistair Clarkson to be there next year as part of the succession plan. And obviously everyone's had a say about that. And then Caroline Wilson effectively issuing a warning. This is the quote. Sam should be very careful about what he says about his premiership coach. He should be very careful. What does that mean?
I haven't seen Caroline since. It's on my list to ask this evening. We're recording Monday, but I don't know. What are you getting at?
Well, it's a threat, isn't it? Should be very careful when he... That was what Caroline said in response to Sam Mitchell refuting what Caroline had said prior. But this is a new level of a... Well, should be very careful. What does it mean? I'm asking you. I thought you might know, given you were with Caro when she first mooted...
I interpreted that to be her saying she felt he was disingenuous on what he was saying about Alistair.
Yeah.
And that she knew differently.
Yes.
That'll be my question tonight.
You will ask that, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know what... I think she has a very different view of the meeting than the both of them have publicly portrayed.
Yep.
And history says sometimes these things can be a little bit somewhere in between, right?
Yes. Now,
whether it's we both closer on Caroline's side of the bridge or their side of the bridge or somewhere in between.
Yep.
What has been clear, and Jeff was quite worked up about it too. He reached out and wasn't wrapped with you and I, and that's fair enough too. It's a very emotive issue. They were naive to think it was going to go any other way than this.
Yeah.
If Sam Mitchell asked my advice, which he never would, I would say to him, don't worry about getting caught up in getting angry and all those things.
Yeah.
The good news is you're the Hawthorn coach for 2023. No one could take that off you. Mm. The even better news is there's a chance you could be coaching 2022. The bad news is you're going to put up with 15 months of rubbish rumour, speculation, innuendo, angst, and that's the tax on the job. It's going to go on for 2, 3, 4 years after you've done it. Every time you finish 10th, 8th, 6th, people are going to question whether you're the right person. Are you still in? And if you are, don't spend a minute worrying about all the negativity because you can't avoid it. It's going to be there until Nathan dealt with it on the way out the door.
There was a level of frustration, wasn't there, in some of the answers he gave last week, Sam, that he cannot continue to live with because he needs to dismiss. Some of this stuff.
Looks like he's got a lot of skills and he's obviously a great person. He needs to harden up quick. That job is going to be, that's what that job is. Mm. And that's what it takes a toll on people. We're all human beings.
Yep. Do you find, Archie, and we've just come off out of a conversation with Glenn Archer,
by the way, I find Jeff unusually sensitive around this. He has been through many of these dust-ups along the way. It feels like this one's a bit close to his heart. The advice for Jeff would be the same. People are going to have different views than you. That's okay in life.
I think Jeff knows that.
That's okay in life.
Do people – this will be easy to have a conversation around if we remove Sam Mitchell from it. But So let's remove the individuals out of this. But I want to ask you, because you've witnessed this as much as I have, and I've got a view on it. People who are like Sam Mitchell, people who are so successful, once they get into the groove of their chosen sport, that they forge a career that is effectively unquestioned. I mean, that man achieved a lot. The athlete achieves a lot. They get to a stage of their life, though, where no one around them, and this is a subconscious, I think, development in this person's, a person's career of this nature, that people aren't necessarily questioning them at all, if not regularly at all.
Yeah.
So when they are questioned, they actually, hang on, what's happening here? This is me. I know how to do things. Whatever I say goes. And I think Sam Mitchell's there at the moment.
Well, the best example of all time is James Heard in that. So that era of superstar were rarely questioned, fated, and not emotionally equipped to deal with things that went wrong. Hmm. I'm not saying he's in – I'm not necessarily agreeing with that Sam hasn't got that ability, but that era of player.
Yep. The cult, the cult-like existence that some of these people immerse them and live in.
Elite people who are high achievers are not – and who have been fated their whole career in one aspect.
And people bow at their altar.
Yeah. Well, they think they still apply sometimes that philosophy to their next career when it's actually just a whole different job with a different, you know, just a name on a page, don't you? So he'll develop that, Sam. I've got no doubt that he'll – not many coaches are battle-hardened at the start, are they? So he'll be – give it 3 years, he'll be tough and cynical.
Well, in some ways, what he's endured in the past 7 days will have crash coursed his way potentially through 18 months of some of this.
Yeah, and sometimes you go the other way. Look at John Longmire. He wouldn't have said 10 years ago that he'd be affable, open, vulnerable, teary, laughing with the players, giving him himself. Oh, he was the Dennis Pagan style at the front, wasn't he? So sometimes people evolve and grow into it. I think Sam will. Tell me, was there a better – people are sick of Hawthorne stuff, so one quick one on just in the sell, I'm interested in, was there a better path to sell this outcome to everybody? Because these are the steps, right? They had to make the decision that Clarkson was going.
Yep, and that's the first decision you make.
Yep, and I think that was made months ago. I don't think that was made just because Sam came and said what's going on. I reckon they'd already arrived at that decision long ago.
Yep.
Number one.
The second part is who takes it over?
Who's next? And the third is when?
Well, the third in this instance, Hutchie, is, well, hang on, we've got a problem with this contract for next year with the person we're getting rid of. So we've got to to have them live together in 2022.
Yeah, that feeds into when.
Yep.
Who's going, who's coming, and when do we do it?
Yeah.
And then when do we do it, but also when do we tell people we're doing it?
Mm. Well, we've got to tell people within minutes of actually doing it.
Yeah, do you, though?
Yeah, you do.
If they had gone, I've been thinking about this.
You do.
If they'd gone to Sam Mitchell and said, Sam,
pull
out of the Collingwood job. If you trust us, you'll do that. And at the end of the year, we will have your future world as a coach here sorted. And you'd keep that information confidential for now.
Okay. You can't do that to Alistair Clarkson. You owe it to Alistair Clarkson. As your starting point, he's your man. He's the one you've actually got the contract with to coach the football club. And the man who has given that football club everything he's got. And as such, Hutchie.
Do you reckon they debated that path, though?
Yep.
Okay, so I'll accept that that's fair.
But you've got to tell Alistair Clarkson.
Could they go on the other way? Alistair, we're not going to reappoint you. We don't want you to talk about it till the end of the year. At the end of the year, we will make it public. And we'll also make public that Sam will be your replacement. We're asking both of you to keep it confidential then. Was that a path you could have tried to sell?
No. Because I think Alistair might have then potentially gone off.
So you ruled out options one and two.
Yeah.
So option three, guys, we have to make this public.
I think what they did.
Hang on a sec.
Sorry.
So option three, we're left with what they did, right?
Yeah.
We have to make this public.
Yep.
Guys, this is uncomfortable for both of you. Before we make it public,
yes.
Can we spend 3, 4, 5 days, however long it's needed, to get you both
this is where you're
at least the same page?
Or at least be able to tell the people involved in the room and who were being presented the scenario that you had more than 20 minutes together 2 days earlier.
The time got them, didn't it?
Yep.
Like if they'd even had 3, 4 days to get some emotion out of it and work out some of the basics.
But you know, you talk about two bulls being in the same paddock. There's three bulls in this paddock. You got Kennett being the biggest bull, and you've got Clarkson and Mitchell.
No doubt about that.
There's not many three bulls in paddock scenarios, Hutch, and that's what you're dealing with here.
No, there's no doubt about that.
And one thing that Alistair Clarkson did do last week, he took a long time to get to his point, but he got there eventually after 3.5 minutes. He concede part of what you said. Yes. He conceded that we hadn't worked out how 2022 was going to look, and that me looking after the now, Sam looking after the future, that's not compatible to how footy clubs run.
So it's easy in hindsight. Often in those situations, I've been the same. You go quickly on letting people know because you think it's the right thing to do.
Yes.
And then the day or two later, you think, oh, I wish I'd only thought through that part of that narrative.
But ultimately,
that's happened to me quite a few times.
Ultimately, Hutchie, as much as people are invested in obviously the project and themselves and each other, there's an incredible amount of distrust at all footy clubs.
Yeah, it's embedded in the industry.
Yeah. So I don't know which parts that Jeff Kennett wouldn't have trusted totally, like implicitly with those conversations you just mooted with Sam Mitchell or Alistair Clarkson and vice versa. I don't know which bits that Alistair would have taken out of such a conversation with Jeff and decided to use. And that's just human nature, actually. That's not even a huge accusation against people.
If you'd bought 2 or 3 or 4 days, you could have maybe convinced Alistair to make it his idea too. Because they didn't have him there yet emotionally, right? So that was what a little bit of time might have. Mm. Now, one scenario here, Alistair, would be for this to be your decision.
Yeah,
have a think about whether you'll say no, give it 72 hours and see how you feel. So that might have been the other. Anyway, it's easy in hindsight.
It's high stakes.
Just on the press conference management, he went too long, clearly. But
this is last Friday?
Yep.
Yep.
But what he did, Alistair, was the right way to handle it. Get on the front foot. Make your point clear before anyone asks a question.
Yeah. Well, almost don't take questions on it.
Perfect.
He hates questions, Alistair. Hates questions.
Well, I think that's why we've talked about this in the past. He does a press conference on Fridays, as for 15 years. That is the least effective day to do a press conference for a coach.
When they were playing in Tasmania regularly.
You play Sunday morning, Sunday morning press conference.
They do outside the Jetstar or the Virgin Lounge at check-in. For 5 minutes. On a Saturday morning at 10:48 when
Friday and Saturday mornings is where he's lived. It's because you get no media oxygen. There are only ever questions about the game. All the issues have burned out, and then you're getting asked about things that are 3 days old.
And this is not meant to be anything other than a statement of fact. It's maybe the experience of some of the journos going to that particular press conference aren't of a nature to push back on.
No, you absolutely get a lower class of journalists on those things because you do. It's the end of the week. It's last minute deadlines. It's less experienced journalist. It's just fact. It's not offending anyone. That's just how it is.
Yep. Now, let's get to the Anastasia Palaszczuk,
when I say
John Coates.
Lower class of journalist, I mean lower level of experience is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. Anastasia Palaszczuk, Queensland Premier in Tokyo to announce the securing of the 2032 Olympic Games for Brisbane. John Coates, in his own world, legendary AOC, IOC, whatever it is he's got with regards to the Olympic movement. There's been no one more synonymous with Australia's Olympic involvement at that negotiation level than John Coates. And the disdain with which he treated Anastasia Palaszczuk, Hutchie, this is actually an older story now. It was probably last Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. We recorded last Monday. It's now Monday of this week. We haven't discussed it. I just want to get your views on it because it was cringy. It was really cringy to see a man treat Anastasia Palaszczuk that way.
He came across as demeaning, insensitive, misogynistic, poorly.
Yeah.
He has since said, his words not mine, that he was asked to say those things by Anastasia to create the, I guess, alibi of why she was going.
And she was facing her own questions about having her state in a form of lockdown or a form of COVID rule, so to speak, and she flying out to Tokyo at this point in time.
Yep. So that he would say that. I would say to that, even if so, not certain of that view, but let's assume it happened.
Yeah.
There's still a way to do that in a respectful manner.
Yes.
That could have been a little bit more jovial and respectful than the way that you portrayed it because it came across poorly. And I know these things travel poorly in the sound bites, but it did.
It was exhibit A of what not to do, I would have thought, right?
Yeah, I thought it absolutely pitched him out of step with community expectations of respect of others, let alone women.
It's just arrogantly condescending.
It was arrogant.
Now, I also know too, actually, we need to throw this in. What we ended up seeing as the, in inverted commas, the sound bite presentation, apparently it did go for 20 minutes or even 30 minutes. So what we saw was a packaged up part of it, but it still doesn't make it in any way justifiable.
Press conference is the sum of the sound bites. Doesn't matter if you exhibit great behaviour for 90 minutes, you are still judged on the one.
And so
you should be. That's the modern world we live in. By the way, I do think the Premier could have just simply said along the way, hey, everybody, I'm really sorry what we're going through. We're bidding for an Olympics. We think we've got a great chance of winning. We think it'll be great for the city. And I know previously I said I wasn't going to the opening ceremony, but it's been drawn to my attention how bad a look this would be for us and our state. I know everyone won't agree with it, accept it, or necessarily understand it, but I'm here to look you in the eye and tell you I'm going.
I've been made aware I should go.
I'm going. I've been given advice that's in the greater good.
I'm
hopeful we win the Olympics, and I'll understand those that don't understand.
Okay.
Just be honest.
I don't even think she had to go, Hutchie. I mean, and even the line, the arrogantly condescending line, this is a $75 million to $100 million event, you know, the opening ceremony. She runs a state. That would be a billions and billions of dollar company, in inverted commas. And he's talking about $75 million to drop in the ocean.
Politicians get way too paranoid about their reaction to them today, tomorrow, or the next day. No one remembers it. Do you think at the ballot box next time around, people are going to go, hang on a minute, I was going to vote for Anastasia, but what was that time 14 months ago where she said she wasn't going to the opening ceremony? You know what? She went. So, no, I'm not voting for you today. People move on quickly. Dan Andrews has suddenly become the beacon of how to handle the media. For 100 days, 100 days last year, he stood there, he answered every question, he had journalists flying in to try and trick him, and we, for 100 days flat, said, have a look at this bloke. And we smashed him. And now, 6 months later, people are going, gee, God, I should ring Dan and see how to, you know, Dan should be the PR advisor to how to handle things. We have got shockingly short memories. And the problem with politicians is they don't understand that. They're worried about today. Don't worry about it. Just call it as it is and get on with it.
Well, they're worried about it, but their army of media people, and there is an army now under Dan.
Survivalists, yep.
Yeah. All them. How many's too many when it comes to those people being on the public purse, Hutchie?
I don't know how many has he got?
Oh, they reckon a lot. Let's just go with a lot. Like more than we've ever seen in Australia.
People are now saying Gladys is ending the press conferences when she chooses, whereas Dan always stayed till the end. Like, you can't win. So what I would say to politicians is just own your behaviour and just live with it. And if it might burn for 24 or 48 hours. I'm not sure it's a great example at the moment, but Andrew Dimitriou was like that, wasn't he? He was just, as the head of the AFL,
not a great example at the moment. No.
This is what we're doing.
Not a great example in anything at the moment, Hutchie.
Hasn't aged well, but that view. But he was. Anyway, I thought when he led, he at least you liked it or didn't like it, but he just said that was what they were doing.
He did. Let's head to the question of the week.
On the sounding board, it's our question of the week for Drinkwise. If you're choosing to drink, choose to Drinkwise.
And this week we will go to Ashley Boltech's question via Facebook. Do you guys care to share a time when either of you hid behind, quote, staff reporters because you didn't want the person/club to know that you were the reporter? Bonus points if they figured it out and you copped their abuse anyway. We talk about staff reporters and staff writers a fair bit on this show.
I reckon when I was young, I'd probably ask for my mobile and not be on a thing or two along the way, but I don't remember a specific instance.
I definitely have, Ashley. I just wish I could, though, recall some specifics. It would have been lower end stuff. So, sometimes it's just stuff that has to get done in a newspaper, Hutchie, and you'd just rather your name not be on it. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think probably the only times are when you're asked to write something. So you might have said, working on a story. Say you're working on a story involving Hawthorn. You're talking to someone at Hawthorn and you've said, don't worry, I'm not writing anything on this. I'm merely building an argument or a case for a future feature story I'm working on. Right?
Yeah.
And then an hour later, the editor will walk into your desk and say, I need you to write me 12 paths on Hawthorn. And you'll say,
Funny.
Look, on any other day I'd normally do that. But today I just gave an assurance to a source of mine and the editor is impervious to your sources. He couldn't care less.
No, they can't.
He or she couldn't care less.
They couldn't care less. Another reason
and
for
then,
it, Hutchie.
The next day, you've written a story in the paper on Hawthorn, and then your contact rings you, and he or she says, "You told me you weren't writing something on this."
I didn't.
And you say,
"My name's
I wasn't going to, but the editor asked me to." And they'll say, "Oh, I'll pull the other one, that old trick. Don't give me the editor routine." And then I don't write the headline. Sub-editors write the headline.
The other one too, Ashley and Hutchie, that I can recall doing was if you then have to and begrudgingly follow up someone else's work, which is always a problem because you should have got the story yourself. If someone else has got an angle, it might have been you at times, Hutchie, that you then, you know, so-and-so said on Channel 7, you just didn't want to put your name to something you should have broken yourself.
Well, yeah, this is interesting areas. I'll give you a couple of things on this.
Yeah.
There is the public wouldn't notice and do not care less, right?
As a rule, I don't.
But there is nothing worse, nothing more demeaning, nothing more self-deflating as a journalist.
Than a story you should have got.
Than following up someone else's yarn you didn't have.
Yep.
And
that's when I used to do it.
And you know what?
That's when I used to just submit it, no byline.
It's like the scene, as I talk about all the time on the movie Ghost, where he recognises the other ghost on the train. and they're the only ones that know
the
that
gig's
ghost.
Up.
When you follow up another journalist's work,
yeah.
You know and they know.
Yeah.
And that is their gold medal.
And other journos know too.
And then the others go, "Oh, did you see Barrett had to follow up your story today?"
Yeah.
And it's the ultimate.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate.
It's the ultimate kick in the guts.
The worst thing is if you need a quote from that story. And so what you find is that goes in the spill.
Yeah.
It's like told The Age or told Channel 7.
Or
30 paragraphs down.
Or the Herald Sun's very good at this these days too, Hutchie. They will take the quote from somewhere else without it saying it where it's got. But again, to your point, in the spill will attribute.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or the other one is to actually not acknowledge you've been in the first place to anger the competitor. And the way to do that is you say things like, "Multiple news outlets have reported."
Yeah. as predicted last week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, the tear out from your Twitter feed where you made a half a suggestion 12:22 p.m. on Friday.
Told you this could happen. It has happened.
There's a few of those Twitter tear outs. In fact, that might be something we'll get to at some stage.
We might. So, Ashley, there's a few reasons for it, and you've hit the nail on the head on a couple of those reasons.
Yeah.
Yep. That was the question
By the way, speaking of journalism, we like the war stories, you and I, don't we?
You do. And people do like your war stories, Hutchie.
When you're a print journalist and you contributed some of the story and someone else contributed the other part,
yep,
and it was a joint byline.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you have a lobby to be the first name rather than
no,
the second?
I did. And I always took the view that it would sort itself out. And sometimes it didn't. And sometimes you'd be shattered.
I saw a lot of by Daryl Timms and Damien Barrett over the years.
Yeah. And if you had a trust with the bloke, and when you mentioned Daryl Timms' name, I did have full trust with Daryl Timms. So when I did do dual bylines with Daryl Timms, it would have been dealt with the right way. If he was putting the story together and he knew it was my story, he would have put my name first. I have full faith. Other journos, not always, Hutchie.
No, people, massive lobbies of their name first.
You would have been big on that, wouldn't you?
Everyone was. And in the industry, as a print journalist, the second name is barely respected. People go, "Oh, Damo had a good story." And you go, "No, it was by Damo and by Daryl Timms." Oh, yeah, but Timsy was the second name. Like, it's not, it's the, and the first name carries all the blame. If the phone, someone rings angry.
Well, sometimes you want it to be the second name for that reason.
Yeah, if someone ever rings angry, they never say, "Is either Damien or Daryl there?" They say, "Is that Barrett there? It's his name on it." And you can't say, "Well, yeah, Daryl wrote half the story." You don't get half the win, and you don't get half the losses.
Nah, half the mitigation of the error. Yep. That was our question of the week for Drink Wise. You won't miss a chance to ask us the tough questions on the sounding board if you drink wise. Hutchie, that's it. Series 6, episode 26 of the sounding board for Drink Wise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to drink wise.
Thanks for listening to the Sounding Board podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Tune in for questions tomorrow, and to send a question to the boys, email thesoundingboard@sen.com.au, follow the show on Twitter @soundingboardep, and like the Facebook page. It's all thanks to Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to Drinkwise.